You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for December 5th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from Irony's Irish Wake, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Yeah, because let's face it, Irony is 6 feet under this week. Yeah. We're going to talk in a moment about the grand jury once again siding with the cops, this time in New York City.
Yeah.
But first, Raw Story had an article about an open carry gun nut.
Yeah.
The police power is just too strong in this country, and we have to stop them from stopping drunk drivers, Driftglass.
Right. Police suspect stupid was involved. So there's this guy. His name is Corey Watkins, and he's a cop watcher. And believe me, some cops need watching. The police power needs watching. You know, I'll blow the Latin, but it's a quis custode custodos. Having never studied with the Jesuits or the nuns, I don't know Latin.
Yeah.
But it means who will guard the guardians? Who will watch the watchers? So Corey Watkins, a self-appointed cop watcher and president of the Open Carry Tarrant County Group, was on his way home from a protest at a traffic safety checkpoint set up by the Arlington police. See, the thing is, Mr. Watkins apparently doesn't believe there should be drunk driving laws and finds any intrusion by the police into the traffic patterns in his local community to check for drunk drivers kind of a horrible intrusion that requires his personal oversight and yelling. And of course, open carrying his guns because he's white and he's an asshole. So you get to do that.
Is he white? Really?
Yeah, he's very, very white. Very, very white.
I'm shocked.
Now, irony might be dead, but karma apparently is alive and well. And it's acting in a very, very fast way these days. It's somebody's hitting the fast forward button on karma, because this sounds like a joke, you know? Mm-hmm. Open carry asshole leaves a DUI checkpoint after yelling at cops about a drunk driver. Guess what happened next?
He got run over by a drunk driver?
He got hit by a drunk driver. And he's not dead, so we can laugh.
No, we can laugh about it because he survived the ordeal.
He's not seriously injured.
Right.
Uh-huh. I don't ask for permission to drive a car I paid for on a road I paid for. He believes that there should be no DUI laws because, you know, freedom and such.
Wow.
But of course, being a conservative asshole of the first water, really, his major problem was with the people who pointed out the irony of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a few sick individuals taking time to think this is a joke, or it's funny that the cops helped me. And he's very happy they helped him. That's great. And then, of course, they gave him a ticket later after his car was totaled. Any sick fuck that thinks this is the time to crack irony jokes can go to hell anyway. He whined like a baby. I'm lucky to be alive. There's some sick people that try to take a situation and spin it to fit their beliefs. Yeah, like you.
Mm-hmm.
When they don't know crap. Some sick people. Motherfucker almost dies and people are joking about it. Disgusting. You know? Wow. This is why we can't talk to these people, because they don't have whatever the wiring is in their fucking heads that lets them perceive of other human beings as co-equal inhabitants of this planet and equally valid in the eyes of God and the law. They don't have that. They're completely sociopathic. They're completely empathy free. They do not accept the fact that anyone who is not like them, white, carrying a gun, and believing all the shit that they believe, and complete assholes.
You missed one very important point on this story, Driftglass, which is he didn't have a valid driver's license.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. It's good we can laugh tonight, because this story from New York City is just one more knife in our guts in terms of the injustice of the world right now is just horrible. And I
did watch the first. This is since I got to beat it out of town in a few hours.
Yeah.
So we have to record this a little bit earlier in the week. I did watch the first few minutes of the Jon Stewart show, the Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
And he just put aside the normal agenda and said, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to say. It was not, I have no comedy in me right now. This is so, because, you know, every single excuse we were handed for why you should shut the fuck up about Ferguson.
Yeah.
Turned out, and karma, I hate to say this, because I don't believe that fate or karma or whatever is cranking the universe works this way.
But
the fact that right after this verdict and right after you had all of these right-wing assholes set up all of these reasons why it was perfectly reasonable for the Ferguson grand jury to return this verdict, all those cards got flipped over all at once. And said, no, see, here's another grand jury, another dead black man, another unarmed dead black man, killed by a cop, and look what happened. Now we can see what happened. We can actually watch it in real time. And he was murdered. He was lynched on the streets of New York in broad daylight on camera, and they let him walk. And
well, I don't want to distract from this topic, but I felt the same way after Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
Like when the movie theater got shot up and there were children in the movie theater who got, you know, who were endangered and shot in this movie theater. When, you know, on an evening when everyone was just supposed to be having a good time, and here comes this crazy person with a gun, and you think, okay, we're going to learn our lesson now.
We're
not going to learn a lesson because of the NRA. And now, you know, Sandy Hook. Okay, let's shoot up a kindergarten. Maybe that will wake people up. Maybe if we move it to New York City, which is the center of the media universe, that will wake people up to racial injustice. But you know what happens at the center of the universe?
Micah
Brzezinski wets her pants and moans about those poor, poor Sony executives. Now, granted, this morning's show was before the announcement of the grand jury. I understand
this is what moves her.
What moves her is these poor Sony executives, and their salaries are exposed by a hacker. And she really made that noise.
Somebody hurt a puppy. By the way, speaking of hurting puppies, I looked this up. You are the penalty for improperly clipping a dog's ears in New York is stiffer than killing a black man in broad daylight. And that's the country you live in.
If you're a cop.
If you're white, this isn't a problem because this will never happen to you.
Yeah.
You will never be suffocated by a cop who thinks he is within his rights. You will never be shot down by a cop like a dog in the street and then have a jury say, that's okay. You can walk. That's okay. And you will never have an entire right-wing radio establishment that has spent the last 20 years calling you a moocher, calling you a thug, calling you a monster, calling you an animal. Immediately side against you and say, see, this is who these people are.
Is Cliven Bundy in jail yet?
No, Cliven Bundy's not in jail.
Has he paid anything to the federal government yet for his taxes?
I have lost all interest in Cliven Bundy.
Well, apparently so is Sean Hannity, but Sean Hannity has all the time in the world to blame Eric Holder. I can't wait to find out how he's going to blame Eric Holder for this one.
Yeah, how? Well, and that's not a hard prediction to make.
No.
It's how are we going to thug up this person?
Yeah.
How are we going to turn this in? Right now at Fox News somewhere in the Fuhrer bunker in Roger Ailes' Fuhrer bunker?
Yeah.
They're having a meeting about, okay, can we thugify this guy enough to make this sound reasonable, or do we distract the fuck out of it?
By saying it's about cigarette taxes, because that's what TCOT is doing tonight. Yeah.
But everybody's tossing their three best ideas.
Oh, by the way, you know who else said that? You know who else said it's about cigarette taxes tonight? Rand Paul.
Yeah. Well, you know, because it's not about race. It's never.
No, it's not about race.
Never about race. We have a black president. Racism is over. I do want to raise this point because this is being covered everywhere.
Yeah.
By everybody. And this, in my opinion, was a lynching. It was a straight up public lynching. Oh, the noose was a cop's arm, and that's the only difference. It was in front of a crowd. It was filmed. Everyone knows who did it, and the guys who did it walked. That's the fucking definition of a lynching on the streets of New York City. But you know, as I'm trying to process this today, like everyone else is, I'm thinking, you know, we talk a lot about the nostalgia of conservatives for the good old days, the 50s, you know, but you know what? They're not nostalgic for like cleaner water. They're never nostalgic for fresh air. They're never nostalgic for open spaces. They're not nostalgic for a good highway system. They're not nostalgic for wages that rise on a regular basis. They're not nostalgic for any of the things that we think of when we think of the positive aspects of the 50s. You never hear them because they don't care about those policies. They hate those policies.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that a bridge falls down and some people die, fuck that. It's not my bridge, not my town, not my problem. So they don't give a shit that wages have been flat since Reagan was president. Mm-hmm. Doesn't bother them the slightest. Mm-hmm. They want nothing to do with policies that will change that at all.
Because that's class warfare.
So what
Judge Napolitano tells them that that's class warfare.
So they're not nostalgic for better wages, cleaner air, wider open spaces, better fucking highways, a brighter sense of the future. They're not nostalgic for any of that. They're nostalgic for that sense of power.
Mm-hmm.
They're nostalgic for the good old days when you could kill a black man and get away with it. When you could attack a woman and that was just your right. You can beat up a fag and that's okay. When you can call a liberal a commie and that's fine. And you could bestride the earth like a fucking colossus and nobody could touch you. Nobody could do shit to you unless, like the mob, you took out someone who was more powerful than you in the white power structure.
Right.
You know, you can't take out a made man, you know, you can't do that. That's verboten. But within the white power structure, you were a god on earth and your country, you know, was the nuclear power. Your country was big and scary and powerful and you could do anything and you could go anywhere. And you know, we've heard stories from our elders about the good old days when you could just hop in a car, go get a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Live a few months there. Hop in another car, get a job.
The relative that had an apartment in Houston, I believe it was, and he and his friend both had jobs at a pizza joint.
Yeah.
And you and I looked at him and went, you two people could afford an apartment?
And a car.
And a car with pizza joint money?
Yeah.
Well, and then we moved.
We went off and did something else. And then we... And there was no sense that you were ever going to fall through the cracks, that you were going to be left behind, that there was ever a town you would not pull into. And C.K. Louis C.K.'s joke about time travel. You know, if white guys will do fine traveling back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no point in history when they wouldn't pull up a chair for you. He said, "The future. I don't want to go to the future." Because the future, that's when you lose all your privilege. I'm kind of fucked in the future. But the past was great. Because if you're a white guy at any point in our history, you're golden. You get anything you want. And you can start over as many times as you want. Like our relatives and our older relatives, you can start over and over again. Hop in a car, go to a different town. There's always going to be a job there for you. There will always be a place for you. There will always be a way for you to make money, raise a family, buy a house, have some kids. Always. And if you want to fuck your secretary, grab a little on the side, and whether she likes it or not, that's your privilege as a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to pound the fuck out of somebody, a four eyes or a queer, that's your right as a and laugh about it. That's your right as a white guy. And that's what they lost.
Yeah. Someone on Twitter pointed out this week that the song "Baby, It's Cold Outside." Hey, what's in this drink? You won't let me leave. I'm calling the cops. You know, that's the modern day, you know, in the 50s, no one thought of, slip a Mickey into her drink and try to have sex with her because it's snowing outdoors, you know, and I hate to make such a charming song sound filthy, but violent, but you can take it that way.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com.
We have two letters that came in a little bit late, and we didn't get to them last week. I don't remember which, but they were letters that we wanted to get to and didn't, and we're going to because it's our show.
Yeah, we can do that. There are no rules here.
Now, the first one was an email from, we're going to call him T.
Call him T.
Uh-huh. Hey, T. All right. And would you read that, please?
I'd be happy to. T writes, "Have we in this country ever given any thought to the fact that the right-wing hate radio is state-sponsored racism, homophobia, and misogyny? Well, you can never say these things at work. You can listen to state-sponsored racism, homophobia, or misogyny on the radio in 4 or 5 formats 24 hours a day while at work, but at low volume. These American-style madrasas of hatred that pretty much tell people they don't have a problem, the mythical liberals do.
liberals.
Liberals. It's the liberals who are behind all this, my friend. Yeah, and that's what they want to hear.
Yeah.
This is, it's as I've said before, this is the same transaction you have with a hooker.
Yeah.
You know, tell me what I want to hear. I'll pay you money. That's it's exactly the same thing, except it's the liberals who are behind it all, my friend. You know who the real racists are? The liberals are the real racists.
All right, and people aren't paying us to hear Rush Limbaugh, so go ahead and tease letter.
Ready? People want to be on the winning side no matter what the risks or costs, as long as they don't have to explain why. This is why you have so many New England Patriot fans in Mississippi, LOL. People don't like us liberals, but they do like our policies a la carte. Very true. Mm-hmm. I guess the best way to get our agenda through is by having statewide referendums. Too bad people are conditioned to hold liberals responsible for everything because we don't have the heart to hold the right wing responsible for anything as a country. Mm-hmm. This is why we used to teach history, so we can all see that was and currently is holding us back as a country. We never would have had a civil rights movement or a women's rights movement if there was hate radio and TV back then. Amen, man. Amen.
Well, I mean, I see his point that certainly Rush Limbaugh in the 1964 would have been on the opposite side of civil rights.
Sure.
But there was another side. The history was written by the winners at that time.
Yeah.
And there was resistance to the civil rights movement.
Oh, God,
those four little girls didn't die in the Birmingham bombing because nobody was incited to do violence against a black church. They were incited. They were incited by media. They were incited by officials, by local officials.
Yep.
And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, Eisenhower signed a civil rights act also.
He did. He did, yeah.
And he got letters from American citizens that were read on the air on NPR within the past 7 or 8 years. Someone published these letters to Ike about race that were, I couldn't believe they read them on the air. They were so horrible. But they did it to point out just what America, this is what you were talking about, what America really looked like in the late 50s.
Yep. And what they really miss. What some people
and
really
how
miss.
Black people are unsanitary. I cannot share a bathroom. This was, you know, the act that then, you know, Mississippi burning and all of that, equal access to public space.
Yep. So it was Eisenhower who sent the National Guard to Little Rock.
Yeah. Yeah. And, integrated, you know, schools, right? Yeah. A Republican president. We forget that.
And I would vote for him tomorrow.
Oh yeah,
if he weren't a communist.
Please bring back an Eisenhauer president.
Yeah, if he weren't a communist. Because by state standards,
he's liberal. I mean, think about how liberal Nixon was too. When you think about some of the policies he signed on to, it was
it was ugly. But it was the media and you know, Martin Luther King was his phone was tapped and his. Yep. Life was
and the FBI was through. Part of the problem.
They were.
You know? Yeah.
They were. And they tried to convince him to commit suicide.
Yeah.
And it was not, you know, there were more than a few death threats.
Yeah.
And he was stoned in Chicago. You know, that he called Chicago the most racist city he'd ever been in. And I would, you know, that's, believe me, that didn't come as a surprise to me when I read that.
Yeah.
But the point being that the movement was smart enough to know how to market itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that in the best possible way. Mm-hmm. Rosa Parks, there were lots of people who would have been willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
She was typecast.
Right, because she was a nice lady.
That was her. She did that on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, this was not an accidental, you know, oh my gosh, a fluke happened and the perfect person. No. She was part of the movement.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of having
children.
Children
get fire hosed. Yep.
Children get fire. Children have dogs put on them. Was a necessary evil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and having everyone dressed in a suit and tie.
Right.
Having, you know, people emphasizing they're working. They're I'm a man. I work. You know, I'm just like you. Mm-hmm. And all the nice ladies in their gloves and their Sunday hats. This was none of this was accidental because this was what freaked out the North. They had no idea this was going on in their country.
Right.
Because the press never talked about it.
Right.
Never talked. It's like it was in its way. It was like Roosevelt.
And when they went, and that's why white people had to go. That's what those Jewish boys from New York City had to go down and register voters and get murdered. Not that they intended to get murdered, but when that happened, all of a sudden you had to drag the lake for bodies. And oh my gosh, look, there are more bodies in the... Who knew? Well, the sheriff knew. Everybody in Mississippi knew.
Yeah, and the sheriff was in on it.
Yeah.
You kidding me? He knew where the bodies were.
Right.
He helped put them there. Or his cousin Merle sure as hell did. And you know,
I'm not laughing about that, but it's just so the idea that there wasn't the kind of resistance that we face today. I realize we're in the middle of this and it feels hard. Right. We have really no idea. And it's important to have a historical perspective.
Well, but I think actually T has a point about this. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this as an advertising term. I don't mean it to be derogatory, but the marketing genius of mm-hmm. the civil rights movement mm-hmm. has been lost.
Yeah.
I don't want Al Sharpton to be in front of the microphone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He has too much goddamn baggage.
Mm-hmm.
But there is. It's not for me to choose. That's for someone else to choose.
Right.
I don't. You know, white people don't get to choose leaders.
Nope.
But here's the thing. If the marketing on the right were as sophisticated in the 60s as it is today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you had beaten and badgered the network news into never reporting anything going on in the South,
mm-hmm.
and every time someone did, it was, well, you got to have both sides.
Yeah, right.
And you had, because remember,
four little girls were bombed to death in Birmingham, Alabama. Well, both sides.
Yeah, well, you know.
What?
Maybe their parents putting them at risk was
maybe
really
their
problem.
Parents shouldn't have put them in the basement of that church.
Right. Knowing the danger, why did
they do that? Why did they send them to church lesson? You know, that their dad might have been unemployed last year for a couple of months.
And you
we should look into that.
You can hear in modern conservative parlance the old time religion.
Yeah.
The outside agitators, the people who aren't from here, the people from the North. The contempt for unions, pardon my language, but all of that is still there. Mm-hmm. But their marketing is so much better. Remember, Roger Ailes in the Nixon administration, Roger Ailes wanted to set up GOP TV.
Absolutely.
The whole idea was we need a Republican conservative TV station. And he tried three or four different times to get the Coors people and a few others mm-hmm. to back a Republican TV station. So they could pump out their property. They wouldn't have to go through ABC, NBC, or CBS. It wouldn't have to be filtered through Walter Cronkite. They could have their own 24 hours a day, 7 days a week propaganda machine. And that's what they didn't have in the 60s. They had George Wallace and they had Bull Connor. And Central Casting, Bull Connor comes from Central Casting. He's exactly who you want to be the leader of your racist fucking sheriff's department. He looks the part. He sounds the part. He can't help but open his mouth and say incredibly hateful, stupid shit. Mm-hmm. So the people who were arrayed on the right, arrayed on under the Confederate flag, were perfect. Were the perfect foil for the civilized Northerners whose children were suddenly down there registering the people to vote, who suddenly discovered they lived in a country full of apartheid.
Right. Right.
And if the modern conservative marketing machine were alive in the 60s, I think T has a point.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe we wouldn't have made any progress at all because everything would have been diffused at the network level as well. You know, there's good, valid points on both sides here.
The person I'm sure who Roger Ailes loved in the Nixon White House, Diane Sawyer, mm-hmm. helped Nixon write his memoirs. You know, there's a blonde news babe that was cloned to be on Fox News and do that propaganda for them. If you'd had that in the 60s, you had January Jones reading the news from ABC News about, oh, those poor Sony executives.
Yeah.
On the day of the Birmingham bombing. Yeah. You know?
If conservative media were as sophisticated and alive and well, we'd still be in fucking Vietnam.
Yeah.
And
Because communism.
And civil rights would still be something way the hell over the horizon that we would talk about occasionally. But that's the feeling you get now. I mean, I'm not trying to transpose my feelings or project them onto anybody else but me. Mm-hmm. But right now, I get the feeling that the people are feeling hopeless.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a bad analogy, and I apologize in advance, but it feels like 2006, 2005, 2004, where, holy fuck, what the people, what do you need to see? What facts do you need to be presented with in order to get it that the people in the White House now in 2004 mm-hmm. are awful people who are wrecking this country? Why the hell don't you see that? And this is sort of what it feels like. It's everyone knows how this theater, this kabuki ends. It ends with nothing being done because there are too many people stacked up on one side of the equation who are absolutely intractably committed to making sure nothing happens. There's too many fucking NRAs on the right.
Yep.
Who have too much, who have their boot right on the throat of the conservative movement and say, no. We're going to find a way to defuse this or distract from this, but we're not going to change a goddamn thing. We are never going to permit an honest conversation about race in this country, because then all of our viewers who freak out over the fact we have a black president will go someplace else.
Yeah, well, and I was just reading on Think Progress. I didn't catch this because I was busy being shocked over this Garner decision. Uh-huh. Fox News, when the decision came down about the grand jury, Gretchen Carlson was on the air. I mean, this is just so perfect. Uh-huh. And she expressed her deep concern about the outcome.
Yes.
I hope nothing bad happens in New York City. And, you know, she also mentioned that the tree lighting ceremony at Rockefeller Center was scheduled for tonight, I hope. And then it was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
War on Christmas. Because the mayor, you know, war on Christmas. Right.
Mark my words. This is the Fort Sumter of the war.
The mayor canceled his appearance at the Rockefeller Center tree lighting ceremony. This whole Garner thing is just a proxy war for the war on Christmas.
Oh, sorry. Hating black people and brown people is the Fox business plan.
Yeah.
And there is nothing that's going to stand in the way of them going right on believing that. Because remember, after Ferguson, they all lined up. They all lined up, and you could throw Clive and Bundy at them, and Lord knows it all day long, just bounced off. One situation has nothing to do with the other. These are completely unrelated. No. La, 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 la. He was a thug. He had it coming. What do you expect? If you mouth off to a cop, that's what happens to you. Mm-hmm. That's their identity. That's who they are. And they will not give that up for anything. So whatever happened in New York must have been some fluke, some coincidence, a one-off. But it certainly is not indicative of any larger problems, because those larger problems are, in fact, our fucking business plan on Fox. Yep. So
and
we're not going to
We can have
it.
A white guy in a suit say, well, you know, it wasn't a chokehold. Oh, now it's a controversy we have to report.
Yeah. Now let's report on both sides of this controversy, and with that Cavuto question at the end of every sentence.
Yeah.
Did he provoke it? Were his parents drug addicts?
Yeah.
We don't know.
Let's ask the question. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's rat fucking to use the parlance of the Nixon administration all day, every day now.
Yep.
And by the way, if you don't know what that expression means, look it up. It means slandering and smearing and destroying people's reputation for political advantage. Mm-hmm. By the way, that's Fox News's other business model.
Well, and if it needs to be done within the party, they'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, they did it to John McCain in North Carolina.
But I mean, every time a young black man is killed by a cop or a cop wannabe,
the
first thing that happens is, let's go find a scary picture of him. Let's darken that picture up a little bit. Let's start calling him a thug. Let's find out if he ever smoked pot. Did he ever flip off anybody? Will you see? What do you expect? He's a bad kid. He comes from a bad family. You can't trust people like that. What did you expect? The thugification of anybody who dies at the hands of a cop, if they're black, is an automatic, instant, preloaded algorithm on the right. And nothing's going to stop it short of stopping it. Negotiating doesn't work. Reasoning with them doesn't work. We have to make sure they don't have any political power anymore. We have to take that away from them. And that's a different discussion for a different day. But reasoning with them is never going to work. Wrap your heads around that.
Thank you, Driftglass.
You're welcome.
We want to read a letter from AB. Another letter.
Yeah.
And this is now one of my girlfriends. She's a knitter.
Oh.
Oh, no. Yes.
They're everywhere.
She's a knitter, and she broke her silence when she found out about the yarn that I bought. And it turns out, I think she bought two. I'm not sure, but I think she did order some. The yarn that's being offered at yarn.com that benefits the 100% of the profits from the company that's making the yarn and the company that's selling the yarn goes to Doctors Without Borders. So, that was a good cause, and when she found out about that I had said that on the podcast, she contacted me and told me how excited she was. And so I'm glad to talk to her, because she wants to talk about knitting and staying out of Hobby Lobbies. We bonded over that, too. Never cross the threshold of a Hobby Lobby. Okay. So she wrote us a snail. She sent us a contribution via PayPal. Thank you very much. And then she wrote a very long snail mail letter. And so, and I'm sorry, I don't mean snail mail letter, of course. I mean USPS Postal Service Go Postal Unions
Go
letter.
Postal
okay.
Unions letter.
Yeah, letter. Okay. And so here she says, Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, this letter has been a long time coming. I used to be so good at letter writing, but then I turned 30 and somehow your head becomes more wedged up your own ass. Just like it took me forever to get it together and send you all a donation. But better late than never, I suppose. My dad and I pay our bills working in the media. That's right. We work in the TV industry in Washington, D.C.
What?
My dad calls us a cog in the wheel. I call us a part of the problem. I can be a bit pessimistic at times, I suppose. We are 5 miles from the Beltway, and when I found your podcast, I felt pleased that I wasn't actually going crazy, because I regularly ask myself, what the fuck does anyone do in Washington besides smugly congratulate each other on giving the world a plethora of lip service while not actually getting the ball rolling on anything? I've been asking myself that since I was 13, most likely born a cynic. I've lived in this area my entire life, and I've always found it hard to swallow at times because a good portion of the population is so full of shit. Insufferable is the word I'm looking for. How will I make things better in the new year? Number one, I'm going to amp up my volunteering. You guys talked about this recently. You never lose when you do. Just doing the present drive at my mom's church isn't nearly enough. It is great fun, though. Plus, when your karma's in check, I find you get less upset with those who push their selfish views off on you. You pity them. It motivates you in every facet of your life. Number two, I'm going to keep the conversation going, especially on Facebook. I am a black female, and I post a lot of stuff about race inequality, feminism, liberal politics, etc. And boy, do I piss people off. I regularly add new white male tears to my collection, and I could not give less of a shit. For every person who gets their knickers in a bunch, 5 more tell me in person, you are the most interesting person on my Facebook feed, and I read your posts first thing in the morning.
Excellent.
I love that conversations keep going on my page like a salon. I also love that people post interesting conversations on my wall, hoping to spark discussion. I jokingly refer to myself as the resident angry black, and there's probably some truth to that. I suppose I should attempt to be more positive, but don't tell anyone I said that.
Don't worry. Your secret is safe
with
us.
That's from AB in Washington, D.C., and we love her. We love her. That's all I have to say about that. Thank you for that letter, and thank you for the contribution. You're a doll. I'm sure we'll be in touch on the Twitter about the yarn and stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
It's the holidays.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me today, I think we should move Christmas and Thanksgiving to right after tax season, when everyone gets their tax refunds, because having Thanksgiving at Christmas at the end of the month when everyone's food stamps have run out is really hard.
It
just is really hard. And I wrote on our notes, holidays happen at the end of the month when there is no money and during the school year when there is no time. No wonder people are depressed this time of year.
And that's why we say happy Zappadan, everybody. Frank Zappa died December 4th and was born on December 21st. Therefore, it was declared that December 4 through 21 should henceforth be known as Zappadan. During this time, we celebrate Frank Zappa across the internet. But here on the podcast, we play royalty-free Christmas music in the background, because if we played Don't Eat the Yellow Snow, Gail Zappa would sue. In any event, Zappadan is a labor of love, with the hope that Frank would be proud.
And I noticed, looking at Christmas cards and trying to figure out whether we were going to buy a box of Christmas cards this year, a lot of cards that said things like, you are our friends and you are like family to us, as if I'm not talking to my family, so I'm going to send this card to you.
Yeah. Will you be my mommy?
I think there's a lot of that going on. I think
there is.
Card card authors and card companies are very much like professional wrestling, really have their finger on the pulse of where people are because they have to. We want to talk about Chris Rock.
Yeah, because he rocks. He's awesome.
He rocks. And there's an interview with Frank Rich in Vulture.com. Apparently, he also did an interview. He's doing interviews because he's got a movie coming out. There's one in Rolling Stone that I haven't read yet. But the one at Vulture, we did read.
Yeah, it's a long one, too.
And it's a long one, and it's really good. I would like white people to read this.
Yes. Yes.
You talked about how, you know, we can't tell black people who their leaders can be. White people, you need to read Frank Rich interviewing Chris Rock because it's really good. And his message, if you don't mind me talking about that.
No. I'd like to point out that a lot of people, and by a lot of people, I mean Andrew Sullivan. and his little crew, his little.
Can I just tell people that I almost told you to shut up at lunch on Tuesday?
You did. Almost. And the food came and then we were okay.
I said, all right. You can get off your Andrew Sullivan soapbox because that wasn't really what I wanted to talk about.
You were very sweet about it.
Look, if you would like to get on an Andrew Sullivan soapbox right now, honey, go right ahead.
No. I really don't. it's the fact that part of this interview has to do with political correctness. What you can and can't say on campus because people who you can and cannot insult. And as a comedian, this is poison for Chris Rock.
Yeah, and Chris Rock talks about how a lot of comedians are just not doing college campuses anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're too conservative, not in the conservative political sense, but in the sense of we don't want to offend anybody ever.
Yeah.
Comedians can't not do that. You know?
And he talks about the various types of censorship that the venue imposes on you, what you can't say at a Christian college or what you can't say at a liberal college. But it's a much bigger interview than that. And the people, sort of the very privileged elite white conservatives who are deeply concerned with Gamergate.
Who
don't know anything about it. They're just very concerned about policing language on the internet and how we shouldn't really punish racism. They're very, very fussy about, you know, Andrew Sullivan had no problem stomping on Alec Baldwin and getting his ass, trying to get his ass fired. But when it comes to anybody else, he doesn't want people to be judgmental or mean. The point being that that group of internet folks who talk among themselves filtered out all the rest of Chris Rock's article.
Yeah.
The only focused on, see, liberals are just as terrible in some respects as conservatives are. Because, you know, both sides. Because you have to have both sides. And if you read the whole thing, it's like, okay, that's you're right.
There's one line in there about liberals are too conservative in terms of not wanting to offend anybody.
On a college campus.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. There is a tiny ivory tower out there somewhere where what you're saying is true.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's the place you live, I guess that seems very large to you. But the rest of the country, especially in a place where people were laughing about Ferguson.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, but it's not political correctness to want to scream at these people in their face and tell them to shut the fuck up when they behave like racist assholes.
Right.
They are punching down. They're picking on weak people. They're picking on the dispossessed and the poor and the people who cannot defend themselves. In the power structure, they're picking on the lower.
Well, and we haven't even talked about Blondie going after the Obama girls. I mean, we haven't even touched on that.
And I'm sorry, but
there's been too much news. But talk about punching down. Yeah,
liberals punch up. By and large, liberals are the people who take to task the people who are bullies and sadists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that sounds like political correctness to you, I don't want to stop anybody from any speech at all. But I would like the marketplace to have a little more teeth to it.
Exactly.
When it comes to saying, you know what?
It can be free speech, but that doesn't mean you can't be judged if you're an asshole about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what they want. The people I'm thinking of really don't want any consequences to obtain to their opinions at all.
And the thing that made me so angry about the Obama girls situation was, of course, bringing prayer into it. I prayed for several hours and decided to apologize.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Chris Rock. And I wanted to particularly bring out his message to white people.
Yeah.
About what has changed in America.
Yeah.
And he points out that anyone who says, well, you know, things have gotten a lot better for blacks. We have a black president now. It's not that things have gotten better for blacks. It's that white people are behaving better.
Yeah, that's
and,
it.
And he used this wonderful analogy of Ike and Tina Turner. And if you see Ike and Tina Turner sitting down and having a coffee together and you say, oh, look, their relationship has improved. No, he stopped punching her in the face.
Right.
His behavior improved to the point where she allowed him, and she had nothing to do with how this situation came about. He had to change.
This was his problem.
His problem.
It was her broken jaw.
Right.
But he was the problem.
He was the problem. And the fact that there's a black president now is because enough white people decided to go to the voting booth.
Yeah.
And it was okay with them to vote for a black guy.
Uh-huh.
Who is Harvard educated and well spoken and you know what did Joe Biden say? Clean,
right?
And what did Harry Reid say? He doesn't have the African dialect.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm not trying to dig up old stuff that people
but
said
it's there.
Mostly,
it's,
but it's there.
This is our culture. This is the thing that Junior dude said today about Lincoln.
Oh, yeah.
How can you admire Lincoln when he's a racist? Well, because, first of all, everybody was a racist.
Yes.
Period. And it's sort of how far do you exceed your basic programming?
Yep. Yep. And
how much
we talked about Jefferson owning slaves. We had a very good conversation about where America has been.
Right.
And how do you get to a better place? And you get to a better place one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that America gets to a better place is when white people start recognizing, oh my God, I have all this privilege.
Right.
And it's not fair.
And
then you start to change things so that not so that you are less, you have less rights.
No.
This is not a zero sum game, folks.
No.
And that's what Fox News wants to make it. Oh, you know, those people, if they want to take away my stuff. No.
Free stuff. No. No, they want to have a shot at the same life you have.
Yeah.
That means there'll be less for you.
And so being aware of your privilege and working to share privilege of being an American citizen with your fellow American citizens is simply us moving to a better place one step at a time. That doesn't mean that it's better for black people, that black people have somehow made progress.
No.
Black people are sitting there waiting for us to make progress. It's damn slow.
And recognizing progress, this is something I wanted to hook Junior Dude up with. And I'm pulling this up from memory, but I won't quote it. But this is, I think it was Frederick Douglass's eulogy for Abraham Lincoln.
Mm.
And it really was judged by the abolitionist standard. He was terrible.
Yeah.
He was tardy. He didn't want to do this. He had to be dragged into it. He took the minimal amount of steps he possibly could. He was just awful. You know, he was slow and tardy and was grudging.
Mm.
And of course, I'm not doing the great Frederick Douglass any favors by misquoting his. He said, but judging him by his times, judging by the people he had to lead as president, he was swift and he was bold and he was amazing and he really moved us forward and we all should be grateful. Mm. And it's really that, judging by the ideal of what he could or should have been or someone should have been able to achieve, he was terrible. Judging him by what he was actually practically capable of doing given the situation he had, he was astonishing. And that's the standard we should look at, because it wasn't lost on Douglass how far Lincoln had taken them, despite the fact he was a deeply flawed person. And there's actually looping this back to Chris Rock. This is not the first time I'm sure someone's jumped from Frederick Douglass to Chris Rock, but if it is, I take credit for it. I don't care. In this article, he uses the analogy. He looks for the right analogy and says something like everybody in Barack Obama, everybody wanted Michael Jordan, but we got Shaq.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
we got
yeah.
Charles Barkley. It's still a Hall of Fame career. And the president should be graded on jobs and peace. And do more people have jobs? Yeah, I suppose. And more peace? Well, not as much as I'd like. But I don't recall anybody ever leaving on an up.
Yeah.
And he said,
That's right. He said no one ever left office on and up. That's right. That's
but he
right.
said the thing about George Bush is that the kid revolutionized the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
How did he do it? He was the first president who only served the people who voted for him. He literally operated like a cable network. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Barack Obama mm-hmm. wants to be the network guy. He wants to govern everybody. He wants to be the president of everybody. George Bush wanted to be president of 50 plus one and didn't give a fuck about anybody else.
Yep.
Neither did anybody in the administration. He just let them all go. If you didn't vote for me, screw you. And believe me, I saw that happen at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
I saw funding cut for really important programs after Bush got into office. And Bush supporters said, well, what the fuck did you expect? I mean, it was creepy how fast things turned into you're either with us or against us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, and that's the advantage that Bush had that Obama doesn't, is that people think you're dumber. That's an advantage. Obama started as a genius. But
yeah.
he goes on to say, and I'm so tempted to sort of agree with him, that Obama should let it all drop. Let it all drop.
Yeah, that's what but that was his. That kind of got me. That really kind of got me. Yeah.
And
he said he should have let everything. He should have let the auto industry die.
Uh-huh.
He should have let the Wall Street go absolutely in the toilet.
Right. Let it all go.
Negative
let it
numbers.
All go to hell.
Yep. Let it all go to hell.
Stand aside. Let it all burn and say, okay, are we all ready?
Clear are we all now ready to work on it?
Yeah. And
yeah.
that way you can implement. You can hire your own coach. He says you can get your own players. He could have done way more if he'd, but you know. He said, we've all been on planes that have turbulence, but we forget about it. Now, if you live through a plane crash, you never forget about it. Yeah. And that's a really good point. If Barack Obama had not been so focused on trying to save the country from destroying itself, which it was on the verge of doing, he could have gotten a lot more done. Because step back and say, George Bush wrecked this country. Let's have a referendum. Show of hands. How many people now agree that conservatism is a fucking awful idea and George Bush has been a fucking disaster? Can we put that one in the history books now? Can we put it, write it down now? Can we turn him into Hoover now? And once we all agree that we're not going to try to pretend this never happened, then we can move on with fixing it. But the entire last 6 years has been an exercise in simultaneously sabotaging the president every possible way you can and pretending that George Bush never happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? They got away with it.
Yep.
They've been gotten away with it. And that's what is so maddening about this, is that you and I and people like us can see this as clear as day. But the people who are in charge of murkying up the mirror and making sure nothing like this conversation ever happens at the national level and can never happen at the national level are people we can never reach.
Yep.
We can never ask. We can never, you know, blow in a call to Chuck Todd and say, hey, Chuck, why the fuck don't you ever talk about this stuff? What you looking
up? I was thinking that Obama quoted a dead novelist when he was talking about Ferguson. Do you remember that? I thought it was Faulkner, but I don't think
it
was.
Oh, yeah. History is not over. It's not even history.
Oh, is that what he said? Did Obama quote that? The past is never dead. It's not even past.
Right.
Faulkner. That was it. I remember when I heard that, and you know, I was doing something in the bedroom, and it came on the TV, and it was on the news. It wasn't live.
Right.
And hearing that, and went, oh, God. We have a president that quotes Faulkner.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the first black president. It's a president that quotes Faulkner.
Remember
and that is really what separates him from the vast majority of Americans.
Remember how you felt when we had a president who could speak in complete paragraphs?
Yeah.
Remember how much conservatives hated the snooty college professor who thought he was so smart?
The strain of anti-intellectualism in this country is huge. Yep. Just huge. But we don't have any of that among our listeners. Hell no.
No. Well, when you braid anti-intellectualism, mm-hmm. Anti-science and bigotry together, you have a hell of a strong rope.
Yep, you do.
With which to hang this country.
Yep. We want to remind our listeners, first of all, thank you everyone that's written in and those of you that sent contributions.
Thank you so much.
We want to remind you of the gourmet coffee rule. We have a gourmet coffee rule here at this podcast.
It's more of a guideline.
The gourmet coffee guideline, which is if you can afford while you're traveling or getting Christmas presents or doing whatever you have to do this holiday season, if you can afford to go out and buy yourself a pumpkin peppermint latte or whatever it is.
What's wrong with you? That's my first question.
First of all, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? Why would you do that?
If you can afford to buy yourself a beverage that contains espresso.
Yeah.
A tall beverage that contains espresso.
Yes.
Please buy one for us by sending $5 to our podcast.
Yes.
And if you cannot afford to do that, this podcast is our gift to you. And
Absolutely.
Don't give it a second thought.
Absolutely.
A free thing that you can do for us is to rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And we haven't asked anyone to do that for a long time. And we really appreciate it when you do that. Thank you. We read those. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week, Internet Kitty is named Balder Moon, a.k.a. the Little Shit. He's a beautiful black cat with gorgeous eyes, and he is the youngest in a household with two other cats. He's the baby, so of course, he gets away with everything. The Little Shit. The Little Shit. Yeah, you know, we have one of those in our house, too.
Yes.
A sure gorgeous, do. Healthy black tomcat who came here as a baby.
Little baby.
Oh, when he was a little baby, he would really milk it.
Yeah.
So he was willing to snuggle and rock and play with his tail while you held him. And oh, yeah. And so now, of course, he gets away with everything.
Yes.
The little shit. Yes, he does. Okay. You can send your Internet Kitty. Oh, check out Balder Moon at our website and Facebook page. And you can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions, especially this time of year. Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, little gal, the Internet Kitties refuse to eat dry food until there's a real liberal in the White House. Yeah, they're going to starve. They're going to starve.
Yeah, I want to hold out on everything until there's a real liberal in the White House.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome! Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Well, let's get started with Science Fiction University. This is from our friend Ten Grain at Mock Paper Scissors. Thank you, Ten Grain.
Thank you, Ten Grain.
He found a hilarious article. At least I think it's hilarious because of its geekitude.
Uh-huh.
It is from a website called typesetinthefuture.com. And it is about the use of various types of fonts in science fiction.
Oh.
Just what the internet was made for. Honestly. I remember that one of the first cool internet applications I ever saw was the periodic table.
Yeah.
With links at each box to the comic book page where that element is mentioned.
Oh my god. Well, see, there are so many overlaps. Like, remember that time we were at a parking lot somewhere and
we made out that time?
We saw the car with the Doctor Who, Beatles.
Yes.
And I can't remember what the third one was. But whatever it was that intersection of everything that middle child is into.
Yeah.
Minecraft. Really, no, it's Minecraft.
Minecraft. Like,
It was Minecraft, Doctor Who, and the Beatles.
And you know what that was? The car really was her TARDIS from the future.
It was.
She was visiting the past, daring to cross her own timeline just to go neener, neener, neener.
Yeah, while we were making out. She was interrupting our makeout session. Let's face it. She does that a lot.
Yeah.
Ten Grain does say, I've yet to find a type designer that was not obsessed with science fiction. So that's very interesting.
Or I would go so far as to say, or probably fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Because Middle Earth has lots of languages in it that
need a font.
Tolkien invented.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he invented the shape of the letters and a bunch
of
stuff.
Yeah, and it's beautiful.
So.
And there are knitting patterns where you can in Hobbit, you know, language, the ring, the words that are on the ring.
You don't know them, do you?
No, I don't.
See?
But
this is going to cause trouble. This will be problematic.
But well, you can knit a scarf with those characters on them. And the pattern is at Ravelry. Because knitting also intersects
with everything.
With Doctor Who, science fiction, the Beatles, and typesetting. So,
yeah.
All right.
Did I tell you, I once went to go see a movie called Helvetica?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, I did.
In Chicago.
I did.
Yes. And it's a good documentary about that particular font. Okay. Ten Grain sent us this article, and this particular article is about font usage in the movie Alien. Not Aliens.
No.
Alien. But we are not going to talk about fonts, per se.
Oh, good. Because at this point, I would
tag
out.
There were a lot of other clues about this movie and the discussion of fonts in this movie. So here are 10 questions about the movie Alien.
Not Aliens, which everyone has seen a hundred times.
Not Aliens. This is Alien.
Which cut is this? Is this the...
I don't want to talk about it. Oh. We're already 4 minutes into this Science Fiction University, and we haven't asked one question yet.
Well, I'm asking a question. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Number one. Uh-huh. What is the name of the ship?
The ship is called the Nostromo.
That's right. The Weyland Yutoni Nostromo. Uh-huh. Bonus point for... 1-8-0-2-4-6-0-9.
Yeah, no, I'm never.
Which is what
that.
It says on the monitor in the opening shot when the computer springs to life. All right, number two. What is the name of the company that had Ripley and Company as miners in space?
Oh, it's the same company. Yeah, it's Weyland.
Very good.
Yeah, Weyland Corporate. I think you mentioned that. I mean.
Yeah, and in future episodes, the name changes to Weyland. Uh-huh. So that's just something to catch next time you watch these movies. Okay. Number three, what does the corporate logo of the Weyland Company look like? And just as an aside, it's on every cup, ashtray, door, food packet, and uniform.
Well, for me, it would be the Masonic symbol, the all-seeing eye, but I don't think that's probably true.
No, everything on the ship is branded with flying wings, and they are very flat little, it almost looks like a stretched out U, but they're flying wings.
Okay.
Number four. What was the beer the crew was drinking in the onboard cafe when the monster pops out?
I'm sorry. All I can think of is Frank Black saying, Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Heineken, fuck that.
Shit. Pabst. Yeah,
so,
that is the greatest line in just about any movie ever.
It's
Shut
right up,
you dumb yuppie fuck. You're supposed to drink an American beer.
Yeah. So many times I wanted to say that.
Okay.
No, that can't be right, but I want it to be right really bad.
It's Weyland Yutani Aspen.
Oh, Lord.
Which is like kind of probably an inside joke about Coors, you know, but everything is corporatized. Yeah. Weyland is everything on the ship. So
that's one of the parts of Alien that I liked a lot was the fact that corporations had basically completely taken the place of government.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Remind me, after this podcast, I want to drink a beer.
Okay.
Number five.
I have to remind you.
What is the name of the main computer that controls all the other computers on the Nostromo?
Oh, that would be Mother.
M-U-T-H-E-R. That's right.
Bad Mother.
And it's the Mother 6000.
Uh-huh.
How many different mechanisms does Ripley have to manipulate to get to the emergency self-destruct panel?
I don't. I assume someone counted these, so I'm guessing I'm guessing it's a prime number. Just I don't know, 15, 17.
It is. You had me laughing so hard. It is push button, pull lever, remove two screws, and pull out two of the four latches. So how many does that up to? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six. If you count removing each screw to be one.
I do.
It's
not regulation otherwise.
This is very Sheldon in Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
You know, they would be having this conversation. But
I'd be, you know, they'd be arguing, and as if I were single, I'd be hitting on his girlfriend. So that'd be my job. They would look up from there.
We have these kind of problems in our home. I realized this the other day when Junior Dude gave his sister an extra piece of gum because he did not want an odd number of pieces of gum in his pack.
What's wrong with that? That makes perfect sense.
I like even numbers. That's it. Okay.
Yeah. Except 13. He likes 13.
Yeah. Okay. The ridiculous instructions to blow up the Nostromos are in English and what other language?
That's a good question. I want to say Chinese, because that is the language of Firefly, and it's also the language, I think, of the Niven Pornell universe. China and the U.S. are the two dominant powers. And it's also the dominant superpower in Stand on Zanzibar. So there was a lot of that going around at the time, but I don't know. I'm guessing.
It is in French. English and French, and they don't say the same thing.
So France conquers China. That's cool. That's good to know.
Number 8. How many steps are there to set the ship to self-destruct once Ripley gets to the self-destruct panel?
I feel like I should be talking, you know, Dustin Hoffman, Rain Man. There are 49 steps. Exactly 49
steps. There are 36 steps. No, there are 9 steps that she has to repeat 4 times, one for each hold.
And by the way, this is a very nice, this is a good quiz.
It is a good quiz.
I appreciate the.
And I want to say that in this article, in Typeset in the Future, all one word, .com is the website. There is a picture of the alien set, and they built it from the outside. You can see that it's just kind of like a spider, but they built it like from the inside out, like the interior of a ship. There are hallways that go to each cabin and each hold. So that sense of claustrophobia for the actors clearly was part of the process of being on the set. So
a practical set.
Yeah.
Much nicer and much more. You can really feed off of that more than you can a green screen.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's true. That's true.
George Lucas.
Right. Here's something. After how much time is the self-destruct sequence non-cancelable?
I don't know. 5 minutes, 4 minutes.
5 minutes.
Oh, really?
10 minutes total. Yes, okay. You guessed it right.
No, that was a complete shot in the dark. I did not know that. That was a random number I pulled out of my
ass. And number 10. With what gas does Ripley flood the cabin of the shuttle that makes the alien scream?
I know halon is a fire suppressant. So I'm going to guess that's probably not it, but I'm going to guess halon anyway.
Nitrosyl chloride.
Oh, yeah, that would be my second guess. Totally.
What is nitrosyl chloride? I'd have to go look that up, people.
It sounds like what you make Clearasil out of, which I haven't used in a couple of years.
It's yellow gas that is most commonly encountered as a decomposition product of aqua regia, a mixture of hydrochloric acid and nitric acid.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah.
What do people use it for?
Killing aliens, obviously.
That's what they use it for.
Yeah. Break glass in case alien.
It's a hazardous substance, corrosive chemical. It doesn't say anything. The New Jersey Department of Health and Senior Services considers it a hazardous substance. That's good to know.
I think it's the shit that burned all her clothes off except her underwear.
Maybe it is.
Yeah, because, you know, she was in her underpants. Okay, was she alone in her sleep pod? Let me ask you that.
I don't know. Was she?
No. Her cat.
Oh, that's right. Her cat.
And her cat's name was, I think, I'm guessing, Jonesy.
Okay.
I think. It wasn't Mr. Mittens. I know that.
Wasn't Mr. Mittens, no.
And what famous character actor from Repo Man was in that movie?
A character from Repo Man? Or an actor from Repo Man? Was it the guy who played the trash man?
Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, Harry Dean Stanton was in that movie. That's right.
Yeah, and Yaphet Kotto was in it.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking aliens pissing on me. Yeah. Yeah, because Harry Dean Stanton has to be in every fifth movie, or it's just not a world worth living in.
Yep.
All right, baby. Well, that was a very good quiz. Thank you, Ten Grain.
Yeah, thank you, Ten Grain. We love you. Okay. And bye.
Bye.
Hey, I love you. Bye.
I love you. Bye.
I keep forgetting because we record this segment of the show first. For most people, this is the end of the podcast. So
farewell.
I have to say, I love you. Bye.
I love you.
I love you. Bye. All right.